来风。Everything is fine. Don't worry about it. I have everything under control. Everything. I definitely did not just hit the microphone with my water bottle. That didn't happen. It didn't happen! How the game builds suspense through funny effects and snoop stuff.
Okay. We're locked in. We're in the dungeon.
A big pizza. Can't do it on a dry throat. That's terrible. That just feels terrible. It's like someone threw a dagger fragment grenade inside my throat. That's terrible. All right. I think we're good. That's my warm-up. Ladies and gentlemen, ladles and germs, welcome back to Independent Incidentals. I am your host, Dominic, and today, we got a little stacked lineup today. I've been playing a lot of games recently, and it's not because I have a lighter workload, I'll tell you that much. Everyone in their second term, here's how it works, right? First term and fall term, you have not a lot of work, but because you've been out of shape mentally for the past couple of months, not doing anything productive, you realize that it's slowly, you have to get those muscles back in order to get them fully functioning. That's what I had to go through in the first term. And then eventually you're propped up in a better position for second term. Problem is that for some reason, I don't know how this works, it has to be some sort of like law of the universe or something, but it gets harder on the second term. So you're more prepared, but also the workload is harder. I feel like that's where I hit my little stride, my sweet spot. Ladies and germs, welcome back. I'll have to admit, right, my 2 weeks off on vacation was not the greatest, all right? Well, I'll put that out there. I'll share that little parasocial snippet of my life with you. There was a few things, the breakup, there was like, you know, nothing much really to do back in Brampton. Didn't get to hang out with the guys as much as I wanted. It was kind of like a menagerie of different things, but I feel like I am back in shape now. I have all my faculties finally returned me. And we're ready to do some good old-fashioned one-on-one, mano-e-mano show hosting with your host, Dominic. This is Independent Incidentals. Now, a little bit of housekeeping. This isn't the first episode back. I actually had a episode a week ago that was on Monday with the manager of the after-class and morning shows, Carissa. Everyone give Carissa a big hand, because she did a great job. I threw her in the deep end. Look, even though we had a similar topic, understanding the lore and history of how Club Penguin, this gigantic phenomenon that was in the late 0s and early 10s, was a bit of a tricky spot, I put her in. It kind of mellowed out, though. So if you want to listen to that, I haven't finished editing it as the time of this recording. So you'll have to, go to Independent Incidentals and wait. Wait for eternity, please. Keep the tab open for the next month. Please do it now. And if you don't want to do that, you can just bookmark the page. I'm not scared to advertise anymore. Look, that's the one thing I was kind of nervous about. At the same time,
I feel like maybe this is not my greatest work. Of course not. Of course, I'm built for bigger things, which I'll get to in a moment, so please stay tuned if you want to hear more about my own projects in the future. But I feel like this is something I can put myself into. I can put my own personality into, and people can read it. They can understand me as a human character, as a human little man, a little guy, you know? So, if you want to check out those episodes, those are up. If you go to RadioLaurier.com, if you go to RadioLaurier.com, you can find all of the episodes. If you're listening to it right now, you probably already found it. So good job. Good job. I think that's pretty much all for housekeeping. You might as well also notice that we have soundproofed walls. Holy mackerel. Apparently this is because someone was actually recording in this booth before I came in. So, you know, no biggie small. Maybe I'll get some artists in here next time. Who knows? It's quite possible. But, let's just jump in right into it. This is episode 10, I believe. No, episode 11! Episode 11! Right, because episode 10 was, Club Penguin with Carissa. Episode 11 is Bellatro. Now, here's the thing. A little bit of context for Bellatro. Bellatro is a game where you play cards. How original, you say, scoffing into your tuxedos and linen suits and say to me, unwittingly, how dare you? How dare you insult my menagerie? Is that a weird word? I don't know. Oh, no. Maybe you're right. Maybe I'm stupid. But it's a poker game. You play hands, and based on how good those cards you put in that hand is, if you put and played a straight, if you played a full house, you know, that kind of stuff, you get points, you get chips. And in order to beat certain antes in the game, you have to get a certain amount of chips in order to win, right? And you do that for who knows how long, 10 rounds? I'll get to that in a second. There's also a bunch of other things, of course. It's not just playing cards. We're not just... This isn't just solitaire. What are you talking about? We're talking about augmentating your deck like a real deck builder roguelike. We're talking about jokers that augment the rules of the game. And we're talking about tarot cards and planet cards that can also augment your deck in very special ways. Changing the elements of the game and making you go for certain builds is kind of the whole roguelike experience. Let's get into it. So, let's a little bit of history on the developer. It was made by one guy who was named, who hasn't actually revealed their name, but online they call themselves Local Thunk. I just call him John Bellatro. So if you want... If you want, I'll just call him John Bellatro. Vote on your phones if you wanted me to call him John Bellatro. Anyway, John Bellatro started game. You know what? I'm going to interchange it so every second time I say John Bellatro. So we'll do, okay. The developer, Local Thunk, started the game development as a hobby. So he didn't actually want to make money. Well, he didn't, you know. People don't expect to make money off of this game. If the devil gave him an opportunity to, you know, give him a chance at game design, I'm sure he'll take it. No questions asked about it. But that's not really the path that a lot of people choose because it's not really a lucrative business. A bunch of other things, business, crunch culture, etc., etc. We don't have to get into that. Point is that you actually worked in IT. He just was an IT guy. Nothing else is really known about him. But Bellatro was actually one of his prototypes. They made a lot of prototypes. I make a lot of prototypes. That's my first plug. I love how abrupt it is. If you want to see my own prototypes, you can go to my itch.io page, / demonic, I think that is the correct thing. I can post it in the Instagram story. I'm sure if you've been following me personally, that you've seen a lot of my own projects that are being posted. So, if you want to go check those out, that's itch.io / demonic on itch.io. I have about like 5 different prototypes I've been working on. One of the more recent ones that I've actually mentioned on Chris's show, that was a remake of a mini game that was in Club Penguin. So, if you're interested, you want to beat my high score, go ahead, check it out. Anyway, besides the point, he used to make prototypes for certain games that he just were interested in at the time. One of the more ingenuitive concepts that he came up with wasn't even a game. It was just a simulation of like bacteria floating around. That's what I remember anyway from the interview. It took him about a couple years on that project. He'd been working in as a hobby in game design for about 10 years. So eventually, he struck upon another idea. You see, the prototype for this game wasn't actually about poker in the beginning. It was actually about a game called Big Two, a kind of trick-playing game. I think it's a Filipino game that kind of just like you play hands and you get points-based. I'm not actually sure how the game works. I didn't look at that part up. But it was inspired by that game at the start. So he started just working a very basic prototype about that, right? And eventually, he was inspired by another roguelike called Luck to Be a Landlord. This included a slot machine instead of, you know, cards. It kind of inspired that kind of more casino-esque style, vibe, whatever you want to call it. This was because someone, a streamer on Twitch called Northern Lion, played this game, Luck to Be a Landlord, and he got inspiration from that and started working on a very basic prototype of Bellatro. His main... I enjoy this personally because I feel like it's really hard for, you know, people in the space, in this kind of development of video games field, to actually get a solid gist on what people, what different developers do and different tactics they kind of come across when they're making games, when they're learning these very verbose game engines that can power their game idea, right? You see, back in the day, there used to be just like, you know, you have to kind of build your own engine. I remember back, I watched one specific video about in around the 2000s era, where you had like a couple of game engines, such as, I believe that Unity was a thing back then. But things like Godot, Game Maker, stuff like that were very rudimentary. So there wasn't a really good, you know, very basic starting point that people could get into. So people had to make their own game engines, which was a very high, tall order, which is why you didn't see a lot of indie games back then. Or at least indie games that looked decent, right? A good example of this, I think, was Braid or another one. I forget which one specifically had... I wish I could remember. But I remember there was one specific game engine. No, it was Fez. Fez. There was a specific game called Fez back in the 2000s that... you had to make a new game engine for, because nothing back in the day could mimic a 2D environment that could turn around in 3D. Granted, we have Unreal, Unity, even Godot can do these kind of things nowadays. But back in the day, this stuff wasn't a thing. So they had to come up with these new ideas and, you know, work around them. I believe that Bellatro, I could look it up real quick, was made... it was made in Lua. That's what the game is. It's a Lua framework that was built for developing games. I've heard that Lua is pretty good because it has a very low learning curve. It has a lot of very high-level coding languages. High-level just basically means that you can talk. It's basically like a English language, practically. So, you know, stuff like if statements are going to be very, you know, English-looking. And it's not what actually looks under the hood when the computer takes that code and turns it into ones and zeros and such, right? Besides the point, he's continued working on it for about 3 years, I believe. Until eventually, after people... most of the games that he published were just to his friends and his family, right? It's just to give, like, get their feedback from the games and see where he's going with it, right? So, eventually, he... puts the game in beta, because a lot of his friends were saying that it was really good. They were putting, like, 20-plus hours into the game, like, within, like, a week. And he's like, oh, wait, I actually have something here. So he put it on Steam, beta, and Wouldn't you know it, the same people he looked up to, not looked up to, but watched Twitch streamers, promoted the game. Kind of accidentally. There's this kind of symbiotic relationship between the YouTube and Twitch spaces and indie games. It's pretty much just a free promotion kind of machine. If you think back to, for example, Markiplier and Five Nights at Freddy's, for example, that's exactly what I'm talking about here. A game that's not really known until some big face puts their own videos out that's showing how cool the game is. Then it spirals, they get a lot of money from it, they get a lot of plays, a lot of sales, etc., and there you go. Marketing 101, thank you. No, you're welcome. You're welcome. I appreciate it. Hold on, I gotta... No, wait. Yeah, you're right. No, thank you. Thank you. But anyway, you see the same cycle, and so basically, there was one streamer called Dan Giesling. His name is Dan Giesling. Used to be on Big Brother, one Big Brother season 10, I believe. such a weird thing to say, just apropos of nothing. He won Big Brother season 10, yes, that Dan Giesling, if you're familiar. There was a specific clip on YouTube that showed the first instance where Dan Giesling showed Northern Lion, the same person who played Luck to Be a Landlord, that inspired Local Thunk to make the game, right? This is how deep we're getting on this. It comes full circle. Northern Lion eventually plays it, and he plays it religiously. He plays it like it's nobody's business. He plays it forever. He plays it for at least a couple of months. Like, obviously he has other games that he streams in between, but his main game for most of that time was Balatro. It eventually got even more plays, a lot of more people, a lot more eyes on it. Until eventually it was published. Back, I think it was 2020... It was 2024, April 2024, I believe, yeah. April 2024, Balatro was eventually released to the 1.0 full version. And if I check my stats real quick, let me just quickly go to steamcharts.com. You can see here, I might put this in the description if you're interested, but the peak was exactly there, around March, April-ish, when the game was released. Go figure. Now, here's the interesting thing. This is not the biggest peak on Balatro's history in the entirety of how long it's been out for, which has been about, I don't know, 10 months? But we'll get to that in a second. Eventually, a couple months later, after the big boom comes out, right, he wants to actually get the game published for mobile and a bunch of other reasons why he wants the game to actually have, like, a publisher. So he goes through a bunch of other people's publishing stuff, emails, stuff like that, until eventually he comes across Playstack, who eventually broaches a publishing deal with John Balatro. Never gets old. And provided mobile support for the game, a mobile port that which I actually have on my phone, which is the main way I play the game because I don't have it on PC, which is really funny to me. So, the game comes on mobile, gets even more attention. People are addicted to the game. I'll tell you how addicting this game is. I play this game whenever I'm in a lecture. It's a parasite. It infects you to the very core of the being. It's very, very fun. And I can't get my hands off of it. Please send help. Please send help. I am slowly drowning in anyway. But what is the game? What is the game? I'll tell you what the game is, listener. I'll tell you what the game is. Now, what you need to understand is this game is like poker, right? You get a hand of cards, about 9 or 10 cards, depending on whether or not you've been a little bit risky in the game. And the goal of the game is to play big hands. Big hands. You can discard cards to get better hands. But the main goal of the game is to play, you know, traditional poker hands, right? Flush, for example, or even, you know, full house, straight flush, four of a kind. those kind of hands, right? Now, the game is split up into different antes, right? Each ante has, I believe it's three different blinds that you can, that you have to get through. Two normal blinds, so there's a small blind and a big blind, and then there's the boss blind that has a special effect that can destroy your build. For example, it can disable all club cards, so every single card that has a club suit on it is no longer gives you any points. You can still play it, but it won't give you any points or any benefits. Additionally, there's a bunch of other things, like, for example, one of the final bosses forces you to always have one card selected. So you can't get rid of it by any other means. You can discard it, but then it'll pick another card to auto-select for you, which is very annoying. Thankfully, I had a very good build on my phone right now that I could do it. I could beat it very easily, succinctly even. Each hand has a base amount of chips it gives you, plus all the chips of the collective ranks of each card. So, you know, for example, a two pair by itself is 20 times 2. The 20 comes from the chips, and then the malt is the important thing. That's where you get big numbers. That's where you get the big numbers, right? So each card also gets scored. So, for example, if you had a two pair, and you had, like, say, two tens and two kings, the kings are scored as tens, so you'd have another 40 chips added on top of that, giving you, if I can do my math right now, 120 chips, because it's 60 times 2. Wow. Thank you. I love math. Love it. Can't get enough of it. Besides the point, you have a bunch of other things in your arsenal to get better hands and even unlock hands that don't exist at normal poker. Like a flush 5, for example. 5 of the exact same type of card. That doesn't exist in real life. Who told you it existed in real life? You're gonna lose all your money at the casino! What are you doing? Ah, no. You're telling me you told the dealer that there's a flush, you're hitting a flush 5? Is that what you told them? Cause it ain't gonna fly here, man. Well, it is gonna fly in Bellagio. In Bellagio, you can add cards to your hand that increase your deck's size and adds more cards into your deck. You can also destroy cards, making it more likely to draw more higher scoring hands. Like, for example, if you destroy all, like, the clubs in your hand, right? It's an easier time to get a flush, because all you have to do is try to get one of those three other suits that you have in your hand. Of course, doing this is extremely difficult, and I've tried, trust me, but it's not that easy. Of course, there is also other pre-built decks that you can start your run with. Each of them have a default ability that you automatically start with at the start of the run. For example, the blue deck allows you to get plus one hand, so each ante, you can play up to, I think, 4 hands. But with this blue deck, you can play up to 5 hands before you lose the game or succeed. There's also the red deck that gives you one discard. There is the black deck that gives you one extra space for your joker slots, which we'll get to in a second. And also there's the checkered deck, which eliminates, I believe, the spades and the diamonds from your deck. So all you have is 26 hearts and 26 clubs in your deck, which is very handy for flushes. But if you want synergies, you want jokers. Jokers are the main way to get synergies in this game. Each joker is very unique in the way that it allows you to either add on chips, add on malt, or do something completely different and a little bit special to itself. For example, there is one card in the game that for each even-numbered card, you can add plus 4 malt to that card. So, for example, if you have that, I think it's called Even Steven, joker inside of your joker slot, you can, for each even-numbered card, get plus 4 malt. Now, there's also chips. For example, there is, what's an interesting one? I'm trying to remember. Oh, yeah, the bull. So in order to get cards and get, you know, special augmentations by jokers, there's the shop. Of course there's a shop. There's a shop in every roguelike. You can't get away from a shop in a roguelike. Come on. So each card has to be bought. Well, not... That's a very confusing thing I just said. In order to add new cards to your full deck, you need to spend money to get it. You get money by beating blinds or having special jokers that do that. For example, there is one joker called Golden Joker that gives you +4 gold or +4 money at the end of the game. You can get your payout, which is approximately, depending on also interest. So based on how much money you already had going into the round, you get, I think, 1 extra money per 5 that you already had in your storage. So it's all really dependent on how well you spend. I see you, student. I see you trying to go to the fancy restaurants again. Not today. Not in Bellatro's world. Not in John Bellatro's world. Sorry. Everything's so expensive nowadays. What happened? I wish I could convert my Bellatro money into real money. Man, I wish I could convert my Bellatro money into real money. That'd be so much better. Man, it sucks. Anyway. That's pretty much it. Obviously, there's also rarity. So based on, you know, how good the card is, how good the Joker is, you get a better benefit. So an example of a rarer Joker is, based on your first discard of the round, this Joker, I think it's called the Burnt Joker, will give you an upgrade in your hand. Now, that's a special word. What does upgrade mean? Now, upgrading a specific hand mainly comes from planet cards. Planet cards are the way to get better base chips and mult. So, for example, there's, I think, 12 base planet cards. For example, Earth card upgrades your full house. So I think it gives you a +20 chips and 2 malt on top of what you already have. And it does it permanently. You don't have to worry about storage or saving that specific card or anything. It just upgrades automatically. So it gives you a better... It gives you more chips for playing a full house. And there's also 2 pair. I think that one is Uranus. Because it did 2 cheeks. You get it? Okay. And also a bunch of other cards. But like I said, you can add certain cards. So, for example, 5 of a Kind is Planet X. And also, I believe I've discovered what a full house flush is, which is Ceres. Ceres is a full house flush. I believe that is like a planet that's not even in... Hold on, wait. Yeah, Ceres is in the asteroid belt. So it's between Jupiter and Mars, basically. That little ring of asteroids in there, Ceres is in that ring of asteroids. I think it's just a dwarf planet. I'm not too sure. I could be wrong about that. But besides the point, you can upgrade cards, but you can upgrade your deck in a very roundabout way. You could do that through what are called tarot cards. Tarot cards are, you know, the basic tarot cards like, you know, Tower, Strength, Lovers, Moon, Death, etc., that give you specific benefits and can manipulate the certain cards. Like, for example, I think, is it Queen or Empress? I forget. But one of those, no, the Empress produces 2 tarot cards, but the Queen, whatever that card is called, turns your specific hand or your specific 2 selected cards into what are called mult cards, which give you +4 mult when you play them. Interesting stuff. It gets you really thinking, your mind jogging about this kind of stuff. You got to think about, like, what is my main build? What am I kind of trying to go for? What is my trajectory? And how am I going to get there? Like, do I need a specific Joker right now? Can I sell that Joker and hopefully try to get a better one inside of one of these booster packs that are in the shop? You know, you got to think about these things as you're going. And you got to also look to the boss blind, see if, like, there's any, like, specific, debuff that would ruin your deck. Like, for example, if you only had club cards in your deck and you got, like, I don't know, the mallet or the hammer or whatever you call it that debuffs all your club cards, you're like, oh no, what am I gonna do? You're basically screwed in that regard, but you gotta add a little bit more, you know, get some more heart cards, get some more diamond cards. John Bellatro specifically is talking about this during the interview he had with Dan Giesling. There was a lot of, you know, people who thought they could just get rid of all their cards in a specific suit and just go for one suit. Problem is that there's specific things that, you know, that wouldn't really work in that regard. The Lovers, however, also could help in this regard as well, because they can count, they turn one card into what is called a wild card that can be played as any suit. So, you know, you can play your card, and it can count as any suit, which means you can either get, like, a full house or a full house flush. You can just get regular flush. It's helpful in that specific regard. If there's any jokers that also benefit from it, like if you have, like, I don't know, what's called a lusty joker, or I think club joker, whatever you call that one joker, that gives you +3 malt for each club card you play. It can benefit you in certain ways. It gets the mind jogging, like I said before. Anyway, there's one specific thing that's interesting. There's this quote-unquote problem with Bellatro that, you know, I guess it's kind of a problem, but it isn't really something that you really think about when playing the game, is that you don't know what you're going to score on a specific hand. What I mean by this is it shows you how many chips you're going to get from the base hand and how much malt you get from the base hand. And you could probably count up how many, you know. But that's the thing. You have to count it up. You have to count up your jokers and see what would trigger in a specific regard. A lot of the time, you're not really going to count that kind of stuff. There's our calculators online that can calculate this kind of stuff, but that wasn't his intention. Local Thunk knew this and didn't want to implement it because it ruined the suspense in the game, and I completely agree with him. Like, obviously there's going to be some scenarios where, like, you're, like, 3 chips away from beating the ante, and you're like, no! No! And you throw your phone on the ground, and you stomp it, and you say, dang, John Bellatro got me again! Anyway. And it's not from real experience. I'm making up a character. It's like a little bit of improv. It's called improv. I don't know if you knew this. It's called improv. So basically, you create a scenario that wouldn't actually happen in real life, and you reenact it as if it would happen in real life. You're kind of assuming like a character or like a kind of persona, if you will. Yes, and, you know, that kind of thing. Anyway, besides the point. Also, it kind of also tells you that you only know how many points you're going to get when you play the hand. Like, you can't go into it knowing, because it kind of ruins the suspense of the game. Additionally, I like it, because if I could count how many points I'm going to get, and I knew I'm going to beat the blind, I'm like, okay, whatever. But, like, once you get enough that you'd be able to beat the blind in one hand, and it starts the effects on the counters that show the chips and the malt start flaming and start, like, burning up, and, like, showing your multiplier getting crazier and, like, the screen starts shaking even more. That is real gameplay. That's what we're talking about. It gets the adrenaline pumping. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Nothing like in Call of Duty or in FIFA could mimic this kind of gameplay. I'm sorry. There's no other game. There's no other game that does it like this. I'm sorry. Anyway. I'm going to quickly go over the rest of what I want to talk about here. But before we do, there's one specific thing I want to talk about. You know how I talked about, you know, the game numbers and how even at the beginning it wasn't like the full peak of the game? There's a little thing called the Game Awards. If you don't know what the Game Awards is, basically every December they have a full, you know, it's mostly advertisements. But like in between, there's like, you know, little rewards that are, that are pushed out to specific, you know, developers. Most of these people are like AAA companies or whatever, so we don't really care about those. But the interesting thing is there's a few awards that kind of go to indie developers. There's the, I believe there's like a couple of them. Their mobile award kind of goes to mobile apps, so, you know, there's going to be some that are, you know, AAA. It's kind of a mixed bag there. Indie award is like pretty much all of it. And I think most innovative is also, is that a Steam award? I forget. Besides the point, the interesting thing is that Bellatro not only got a nomination in the Mobile Award and also the Indie Award, but also got a nomination for the Game of the Year. Now, if you don't know the rest of the lineup, let me just tell you a few names. There was Wukong, the monkey game. There was the DLC for Elden Ring. Really shows you how the this last year was not the greatest. There is also Astrobots, which is kind of like the PS5 mascot game that has all like the PS, the Sony IPs that are shoved into there. It looks fun. Don't really know how it plays, but it looks fun. There was also that the anime game, Persona kind of game. I forget what it was called. And there was one more game that I also forget what it was called. I'll let you know later, because we're going to quickly do a little intermission. At the end of these awards, before they reveal the final person who wins the game awards, by the way, Balatro won both titles for indie and also for mobile, which is crazy to me. Because some of them were stacked. I'm just going to put it out there. Some of them were stacked. Before they reveal the final game of the year, they have a beautiful medley that's put together of all the main themes of all the nominees, and they string them together into one gigantic medley. It's beautiful. It's so well composed. It's live. It has a bunch of very talented individuals who are playing the instruments there. But also, there's interesting stuff here. It's not just trumpets and violins, all right? There's some more interesting stuff here at play, you might notice. Also, shout out to the flute guy. Everyone loves the flute guy. I think he's a friend of Hans Zimmer or something like that. And he goes hard on the flute and the contra flute and all the other cool wind instruments he plays during it. You can hear him kind of just in the background, like the high fluty sound, if you will. So let's just quickly do a quick 3-minute intermission, and we'll talk about it afterwards. Game Awards. Oh, it's good. I always love this part. Even I think the rest is just kind of like shameless plugs, advertisements, and stuff like that. Unlike this show, of course. I do love the final 20 minutes of this show. It is so fun to watch. Especially, did you hear that? The synthesizer with like all of the actual acoustic instruments. It just works so well. A lot of people online are pissed because it turns the song is in 7/4, so it has the quarter note that gets the beat, and then 7 beats per bar, right? Kind of splits up how you look at it. And then they turned the theme into 4/4. Of course. I mean, like, you have to if you want, like, everything else to match up. It just makes it so much easier. Humans are just better at counting 4 than 7. I'm sorry. Besides the point, I believe that every time it just makes me tear up, man. It's just so cool. It's just so cool. It seemed like the synthesizer with all the other instruments in there, man. Also, shouts out to the, there's one guy in the audience, one guy in the orchestra who has a glass tuba, I mean glass, no, glass trumpet. I'm frazzled today. Glass trumpet. It does look cool. You can see his hand through it, which is very ominous, but I do like it a lot. But besides the point, I think that Balatro, I think it deserved it. You know what? I think that Astrobot, I think, also deserved it. Because at the end of the day, a lot of these games, you know, probably built under, you know, kind of depraved companies and developing teams that, you know, didn't really care about their workers that much. But we don't talk about that. That's fine. If we don't talk about it, we don't have to worry about it. I think it's one of the main things that, like, one of the main reasons why John Balatro never really took to going to an actual, instead of working at IT, you could have been working at a game development studio. Why didn't he? I think the main reason is just because nowadays, especially, the amount of layoffs that you see surrounding it, the amount of abuse that happens within it, and it just doesn't... I don't mean to get too depressing. I just think that there's a lot that needs to improve about the games industry that needs to happen before this can actually become a commercial thing. Because, like, with studios, with, like, you know, film studios, there's still, like, probably a lot of stuff that happens behind the scenes. But most of it is, like, with respect. I think that, like, a lot of the actors appreciate all of the costume designers and the set and the cinematographers and all the people that work on the movie that they're producing. Because it just has to, right? And most of the movies that don't have a good foundation for that often fall under, because you can't really act in the same room as someone that you hate, right? It doesn't work. Especially if you try to belittle someone that's working in a, you know, field that's you get paid less in, right? But with game development, everyone's pretty much at the same level and the same playing field, right? So the only thing that's different is how much work people put in, which is why it's so centered around the crunch culture, trying to get to the deadline within like 2 weeks, and you still have like all of this processing you have to do and like all the different departments that you have to, you know, argue with in order to get your game across, or your specific goal in the game, or your specific, what would you call it? I guess your main field of what you're trying to develop in the game. Like, are you an artist, or are you like a designer, or are you, you know, a software engineer? It's like, it's a very diverse project. It doesn't just take like a film crew, a few set designers, and a, you know, a makeup artist, right? It's a full thing that you have to get all of these people to work on simultaneously. So it makes sense that like this kind of industry is, I guess, belittled? I don't know if that's the right word. But I think that games need an actual voice, and the main way to do that is to get, like, these independent people to work on them, right? One guy made all of this, got to this height, got to this level of the game, of not the game, but just how successful he was. And it's not about success, it's just showing that you can make it, even if you don't have a whole crew backing behind you. Every single one of these games are made by approximately thousands of people, collectively, right? And Bellatro is just like a single drop into that pool of developers. He made the music, I mean, not the music. He hired someone to make the music. He got on Fiverr, which is very cool. I think shout out to Lewis F. If you ever want to collaborate, let me know. But no, he made the artwork for it. He made pretty much almost every single Joker in the thing, right? The only exception, of course, is I think the one Joker called Vagabond, which he had a friend work on. And also there was a little expansion that can turn the King, Queen, and Jack cards into different video game characters. So, for example, it's all cosmetic, by the way, so they don't give you any special benefits. But, for example, for my clubs, you can turn those clubs, the King of Clubs, into the Ironclad from Slay the Spire. Or you can turn it into Isaac from The Binding of Isaac, right? For diamonds, that's what I'm going to get to, there were three special cards. The King was all Stardew characters, specifically designed by Eric Barone. He wanted to try to imitate Local Thunk style by working on these cards himself, by actually drawing, I think, what was it? Mare Lewis, Marnie, was as the queen, and, what's his name? Pierre for the Jack. He's like the main shop seller in Stardew Valley, if you're familiar with that game, which is really cool. And there's also a bunch of other collaborations, too. I think for Diamonds, there's a Cyberpunk 77 of the design. I think Johnny Depp is like the main guy, is the king in that specific suit, which is really cool. Like, it's like one guy who's able to branch out and show support for all of these different games, big and small. It's like, it's incredible to me. It gives me hope for the industry. It honestly does. It provides me with that small inkling of hope that I'm like, Maybe one day if I put myself on the chopping block and I keep making games, I can finally get to that level. But you know what? Hey, we still got a lot of games to cover this term, so I'm holding my breath. We're going to keep going through this year, and we're going to see whether or not the industry is going to improve, or if it's going to fall under, or if AI is going to destroy everything, and we're going to all die because of these robots that are going to take over. Who knows, man? Who knows? Anyway, final closing thing. Hold on, where did it go? I had it here a second ago. Why is Honey Pop trending? Jesus, you people are depraved. Anyway, Bellatro had one of its peaks right when it was published. I think it was somewhere around March or April when it was finally published, and then it slowly trailed off during the June months. It was kind of just kind of like a game you could play like on and off during that time. And eventually it soared in popularity after the Game Awards during December and into January too. It took a bit dip in the middle, but then eventually rose even more into popularity on Steam specifically, which is crazy to me. Like, over approximately 41,000 concurrent players sometime today. It's crazy to me. It's crazy to me how a game, just by itself, literally got more promotion from the Game Awards. Normally, like, it's the Game Awards that, you know, collectively brings all these games together, right? And that people can vote on and get people, you know, kind of... They already know. That's what I'm trying to get at here. They already know what game they want to get through, right? Whether you're a fan of Elden Ring, for example, or you're, you know, a diehard Wukong fan, right? These games are championed by their fan base, but their fan base for Bellatro was so out of the normal player base, right? Again, like I said, Wukong got more than like a million concurrent players at one point. That eventually it was able to pull back in a bunch of other players to play Bellatro. And if I look at, like, you know, Wukong, for example. Hold on. It kind of trailed off a little bit. Granted, it still has, like, you know, yeah, it still has a lot of players. Granted. But nowhere near what it had at the very start of its release, which had more than a million concurrent players, right? So it's just like, it's very circumstantial. It's very based on how you can get your game out there, how you can market it to people without having to spend too much money, right? Because main thing that John Bellatro mainly spent his money on making this game was the music. He hired someone to make it, right? Louis F. shouts out. But also, you have to, like, for bigger games, you have, like, a whole marketing team for this kind of stuff, right? And he's just one guy. He's just one guy who's supposed to market his game about cards and cool synergies between jokers and tarot cards and upgrading your planets to get better hands and stuff like that. You know? It's like, it's a very difficult thing to get into. And he's kind of talking about that, too. Like, with the interview with Dan Giesling that I watched, the main thing that he wants to do right now is finish, polish the game, have it fully released, and just have it there, right? It's kind of like a homage, like, just like a thing that you can just boot up occasionally. Solitaire on your computer, for example, right? Or on your phone, or whatever, right? Something just to kill the time. Something just to buy the time and, you know, have a little fun. Just have a little fun on the side, right? And he just wants to keep making games. Now that he doesn't have to work at IT anymore, he just can keep making games independently. And maybe 3 years later, release another one that blows people away again. And I think that's exactly where I want to end it. I think that's perfect. Because it encapsulates exactly what I want to talk about here. It's a person that didn't have any pressure or any clue about how popular he would get. And then eventually gets there, just apropos of nothing. Obviously, being a very good game designer in his own right. He never played a deck builder before. This is his first deck builder that he actually made, right? So it's kind of just, it shows just like how, if you just keep at it 10 years, you can eventually get something out that you can be proud in, and then, you know, people can enjoy. And you don't have to even put your face on it. Anyway. I put my face on everything. So, this is a quick shameless plug. if you wanna follow the show, you can go to Independent Incidentals on Instagram. I'm there. I post all of the clips. Not the clips, but the announcements for when the show is coming up. Or if anything got released. We just recently had a full overhaul over the past winter of all the episodes that got released back in fall term. So if you want to listen to those, get at it. Get at it, Tiger. Come on. All right. Anyway. I could do this for years. I can do this for aeons, man. But let's just quickly see what we got here. We can quickly boot up a little bit more Bellatro theme, perhaps. A little bit more Bellatro theme. I love me a Bellatro. I love me a good Bellatro, I'll tell you what. It's gonna be back. I hope I get more guests. That's my main goal. Problem is, again, I've talked about it with Jackson. He knows the pain of having to, you know, talk to people and say, hey, you want to join the show? And he's like, no, I'm a bit nervous. And I'm like, okay, I get it. But like, also, I don't see anybody here. I'm in a black box right now. Help me. Besides the point. Let's boot up the Arcana theme. You know what? Yeah, we'll do all those. Why not? I got a little time in the studio. You can listen along too. Why not? We got on the docket, on the payroll, we got the Arcana theme. So whenever you open a booster pack for tarot cards, so you can modify you get like a whole hand of decks, and you can just like, I want those to be diamonds, and I want that one to be give me a golden card. It gives me 3 money at the end of the round. All right, you know, that kind of thing. Celestial theme, I'm pretty sure that's the planet theme, so that's when you buy a planet booster pack. So you're like, oh, I want to upgrade that one, and then I want to upgrade the full at the house, and I want to upgrade the 2 pair, and then I want to upgrade the high card. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And then, obviously, the boss theme. The boss theme is played during the boss, and I'm like, oh, no, help me, please. Besides the point, I hope you enjoyed. I hope you have a wonderful, fantastic day. And I hope that everything goes well with you. Love you. I'm getting too parasocial. I gotta stop. Okay, I'll see you later. Bye-bye. Didn't mean to make it awkward. No. I didn't mean to make it awkward. That's not my intent. I didn't mean to do that. I'm so sorry. I'm so